Welcome to Talking History. My name is Susan Gauss. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of History and the Department of Latin American, Caribbean, and U.S. Latino Studies at the University at Albany, SUNY. We're speaking today with Dr. Christine Eric, an associate professor in the Department of History at the University of Louisville in Louisville, Kentucky. Dr. Eric is the author of The Shield of the Weak, Feminism and the State in Uruguay from 1903 to 1933, published by the University of New Mexico Press in 2005. Today we'll be speaking with her about her most recent project on radio in Uruguay and Argentina during radio's golden age in the 1930s and the 1940s. So thank you for being with us today, Dr. Eric.
Thanks for having me.
I thought we could start off speaking today about Radio Femenina, which is one of the centers of your project, which was founded in Montevideo, Uruguay in 1935. And I was curious if you could tell us a little bit about the founding of the station and who its backers were and what the initial goals were of Radio Femenina.
Sure. Well, the attempt to create a station using what they talked about as the last little piece of air available on the dial, on the high end of the AM dial, goes back to the early 1930s. And actually, in the early part of 1933, there was a contest announced in an important radio magazine called La Cancionera in Uruguay, asking listeners to send in their suggestions for the name of this new station. Now, there was never any winner announced for this contest that I could ever find, but when the station finally did go on the air, there were various delays, but when the station finally went on the air in October of 1935, it went on the air with the name Radio Femenina, or Radio Femenina, or sometimes more formally, the Women's Radio Station of Uruguay. And in terms of the goals of the station, it seemed pretty clear from the backers behind it and the motivations behind the station and the idea of creating a radio station that was populated by women's voices and aimed at a female audience, that the goals were really not political but more commercial. That is, women were in Latin America, just as elsewhere, the acknowledged majority of the radio listening audience. Radio in Latin America was like radio in the United States in that it was commercial radio. It was not the more state-run model that you saw in, say, Western European radio. And the goal of Radio Femenina in its origins, from my best understanding, was really about gathering sponsors and selling products to women who were the majority of the listening audience.
And are these mostly middle class or working class women, or what segments of the population are they targeting?
They're clearly targeting middle class women. The bulk of there are attempts, various kind of cursory attempts to speak to working women, but it is usually a distinct minority of the programming aim. I think the goal is absolutely to aim at the consumer housewife and at mostly at middle class women and, you know, potentially a little bit upper class women.
So who was behind the station when?
Well, one of the big sponsors, one of the big kind of company sponsors of the station was the River Plate Dairy Company, which was also known as Dairy Co., which was actually an Argentine dairy production company that when Radio Femenina first went on the air was in the process of registering its brand for the Uruguayan market. And this was also coincided with the creation actually of a national dairy cooperative in Uruguay. So I think it was an attempt to gain entry into this market. And it's also somewhat unclear from the record how much Radio Femenina was actually being aimed at the market, radio listeners in Argentina, specifically in Buenos Aires. And so I think it was a dual issue. And in terms of the other part of your question, the people behind it, I mean, this is where things start to get very fuzzy and lead us down the road to material I'm sure we'll get to later about what happens with Radio Femenina during World War II. Mm-hmm. But you know, the backers were kind of radio, you know, businessmen, a guy named Filguera and a guy named Canepa. And again, there doesn't seem to be anything to suggest, at least from what I've seen, that there was any specific political motivation for it, but that it was really about trying to create a commercial niche, to do something that the very crowded radio market in the Rio de la Plata was not doing, which was specifically targeting those housewives who were the bulk of the radio listeners and targeting them, you know, and using this Radio Feminina brand as a way to attract commercial sponsors.
So is this a rapidly growing segment of the population then, or are there just the middle classes are growing very quickly at the time, or is what are they responding to here, I guess? And
well, what's happening is that, you know, countries like Argentina and Uruguay, by Latin American standards in the 1930s, are quite affluent. The development of radio in Latin America during the Golden Age and even earlier was quite uneven. So in the 1930s, Argentina, for example, was estimated in 1934 to be home of fully two-thirds of the radio receivers in South America. And Uruguay was actually in number three place in the number in terms of absolute numbers of radio receivers owned. Argentina was first, Brazil was second, and tiny little Uruguay was third. So this was, you know, these were countries where there were larger middle classes and where the working classes were increasingly had enough purchasing power and enough free time to a limited degree to be able to listen to radio. In contrast, countries like Bolivia in the 1930s barely had radio at all. It was an extremely limited kind of medium. But one of the things that was happening specifically in the Uruguayan case, and this even contrasts with what was happening in Argentina, is that there was a fairly open field. There were a lot of radio stations that were created for a country that had barely 2 million people at that point. And so there was an intense amount of competition for sponsorship dollars and for radio listeners. And so I think, you know, it was, and as I said earlier, women were the acknowledged in Latin America, just as in the United States, women and especially housewives were the majority of the listening audience. And so I think it was really about specifically going after that segment of the market, and it was really about trying to compete for very scarce advertising revenues.
So what were some of the early shows like then? I know Radio Feminina transformed as World War II became bigger in the minds of Uruguayans, but early on, what were sort of what were some of the shows and personalities who were involved in the station?
Well, what happens, there's actually a transformation that precedes some of the complications that emerged during the war. When the station first went on the air, it clearly, the types of programming were fairly traditional, what you might expect, kind of women's chat sort of programs and programs dedicated to recipes and stain removal and child raising tips and those sort of things. But what happens is that you start to see this transformation in the station starting after it had been on the air about a year in 1936 and through 1937, where more and more politically active women in Uruguay, women intellectuals, feminists, and other kinds of prominent women began to gravitate towards Radio Feminina. Many of them had previously been fairly active on another station that was a more left-oriented, a station more associated with the Uruguayan Socialist Party. But as I said, by 36, 37, women were gravitating and moving towards Radio Feminina. And so what you have by 1937, 1938, is the station has really transformed into quite a remarkable kind of thing. You have, I'm going to have to pause here because I lost my notes. You have stations that programs that are dedicated to women's art. You have female lawyers giving talks on women, on the rights, the legal rights of women and children in Uruguayan law.
And is this alongside some of the consumer-oriented programming and self-help, or is it really transforming?
The consumer-oriented programming remains, but it is becoming more of a minority of the kind of programming that's going on. Radio Feminina became the sort of official radio station during that time of the Democratic Feminist Party, an attempt to create a women's political party, which was a party which was formed after Uruguayan women won the right to vote in late 1932. It became essentially the official station of the Women's Anti-Alcohol League. It became the official station of the Uruguayan Association of Women University Graduates, and all sorts of things. And most importantly, and this becomes important in terms of the World War II context as well, the station became the favorite home of Uruguay's most important female physician and most important and well-known feminist activist, Doctora Paulina Luisi. And she became an important presence on Radio Feminina, and particularly so as we move into the late 1930s and as war is the beginning, the war is beginning in Europe, World War II is beginning in Europe, and she gave a number of fairly fiery speeches on Radio Feminina about the dangers of fascism for women and the need for Latin American women to understand the threat that the rise of Hitler and Mussolini posed to women in around the world and indeed women in Latin America.
I know from some of your earlier writing you've spoken quite a bit about how Uruguay was relatively a progressive state in terms of issues of labor rights and welfare rights and women's rights. Do you think how diverse Radio Feminina is and its placement in Uruguay at that time, do you think it's unique to Uruguay?
It's hard to say. I hesitate because the scholarship on this subject is so thin at this point. Radio Feminina certainly claimed to be the first all-women radio station in the hemisphere. I haven't yet seen any data to contradict that. The closest equivalent in the United States, which has been covered in the Talking History program previously, is WHER in Memphis, which claimed to be the first all-girl station in the world, but they went on the air in 1955, fully 20 years after Radio Feminina went on the air. I do think, in terms of your question, that there was a unique environment in Uruguay. It was a country that prided itself on its sort of progressivism, and it was a country where access to the radio waves was fairly unimpeded, at least until the later 1930s and early 1940s. So I think it was it provided an opportunity. There were mobilized women's groups who seized upon this new medium as a way to get their message out and a way to have their voices heard in the public sphere at a time when women had, you know, were winning the right to vote in the early 1930s. And so I think there was an openness to Uruguayan radio that was fairly unique in Latin America, certainly in contrast. Simply looking across the river to what was happening, especially in Buenos Aires, there was very little equivalent kind of openness in radio broadcasting. Go ahead.
Do you have any sense of the sort of receivership? What the popular response to Radio Feminina was? Did they reach the middle class women they were originally targeting, or was this shift in 1936 and 1937? Did that shift the listening population as well?
It appears that it's difficult to get any kind of reliable data on listenership, but it appears from the radio magazines of the day that Radio Feminina, during its heyday, during the later 1930s, did have a fairly substantial listenership. The main radio magazine, the main Uruguayan radio magazine, praises the station not only for its popularity, but for bringing the voices of women intellectuals onto the airwaves and all of that. So while it certainly never competed with the big powerhouse commercial radio stations of the time, stations like Radio Carve, which was the dominant radio station through most of the radio's golden age in Uruguay, it maintained a fairly solid position for at least this short period of time and did attract a certain substantial niche, again, within what was an extremely crowded mm-hmm. radio market in Montevideo.
I'm curious because you said this shift in 1936 and 1937 where the content became more political. One of the things you also added was that it was quite diverse. And so I'm curious about why women jumped on this opportunity, women from across the political spectrum, it seems.
Well, I want to make a correction to that, because there was certainly an exception. I would say that it attracted women. Radio Feminina itself attracted mostly what we would call liberal feminists, people from the sort of central place. There were other radio stations where you had other women's voices. The Catholic Ladies League, which was a very aristocratic conservative organization, was quite active on Radio Jackson, which was the Catholic radio station. And you did have less, but still some presence of left women on more left-oriented radio stations like La Voz del Aire, which was the important left station on the air at the time.
And so when you say liberal feminism in Uruguay in the mid-30s, what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about organizations and what was left over. These were the organizations like the Uruguayan Association for Women's Suffrage and, again, organizations like the Association of Women University Graduates, this feminist party that I mentioned previously, mostly women who were university-trained professionals who had educators and so forth who had been involved in the fight and the campaign for women's suffrage through the 1920s and through the early 1930s, and who saw radio as a way to educate women who were now citizens, or to educate them in this business of citizenship and to bring them into civil society in a substantial way. So these were the women who we tended to see on appearing or hear, if we had the transcripts, if we had recordings, to hear on Radio Feminina, intellectuals, physicians, women physicians, women lawyers, and so forth, who many of whom were veterans of feminist organizing in the earlier period.
So was there any official response, any official opposition or support for this, or...?
Not that I could determine, not in these early years. Again, there was certainly praise for the station and for what it was doing in the radio, and this was actually the official radio program guide, so it was at least loosely affiliated with the Uruguayan state, was praising this activity of Radio Feminina in the late 1930s for bringing this kind of intellectual material to its mostly female listeners. So I have not come across any kind of strong opposition to the programming that was going on. I suspect it was there, but I haven't seen it, not until the war gets going.
I wanted to go back. You mentioned Paulina Luisi,
yeah,
who is this well-known feminist and anti-fascist who
right.
Seems to be a very who was a very prominent speaker on the radio station, a very prominent personality on the radio station and in Uruguay in general. If you could speak a little bit more about her and what she was doing at that time.
Yeah, I mean, Paulina Luisi was sort of the main figure of Uruguayan feminism for much of the first half of the 20th century. She was Uruguay's first female physician, the first female graduate of medical school, and became a very important figure and was the leading figure in the Uruguayan feminist and pro-suffrage movement in the 1920s and 1930s. And following the acquisition of women's suffrage in 1932, she increasingly shifted her attention towards the threat in Europe, towards the rise of fascism, and actually in some places consciously said, I'm setting aside the struggle for women's equality in favor of a more immediate threat, which is the threat of fascism, not only in Europe, but that she saw as a potential threat in Latin America as well. And there's a lot of indication that that Paulina Luisi was fairly hesitant to speak on the radio in earlier years, in 1935 and 1936, and even into 1937, she tended to shy away from the microphone, but she clearly got over her hesitancy about the medium and became quite an important radio personality and quite a forceful anti-fascist voice on the Uruguayan airwaves. And I have, for example, a speech from 1938 that that she gave on Radio Feminina, which was called The Duty of the Moment, where, again, she spoke very forcefully of the danger of fascism for women, that fascists were out to roll back any and all gains that that the women's movement had made in the previous decades. And she, you know, urged women to take this threat seriously. And one of the things that's very interesting is that Paulina Luisi remained a presence and a figure and a participant in Radio Feminina into the late 1930s. And indeed, it seems even into the early 1940s, when the station had already been blacklisted as a pro-Axis radio station. So it's one of the curiosities of the story that if the station really had been a mouthpiece for pro-Axis propaganda, certainly Paulina Luisi, as one of the more savvy anti-fascist activists in the country, would have had nothing to do with it. Yet she maintained a presence on the radio station into the late 1930s and to some degree into the early 1940s.
So was there a prominent fascist movement in Uruguay at the time or in South America in general?
There was a movement in Uruguay, but it was fairly small and quite limited. Much of it revolved around the small German immigrant community in the country. There was certainly the political right wing in Uruguay had certain sympathies, mostly more for the Italian brand of fascism and the Spanish brand of fascism than the German brand. But it was there, but it was quite small. Where there was a more substantial, or at least perceived to be a more substantial sympathy for the Axis during the war and before the war began, was in Argentina. And certainly in terms of the U.S. concerns about fascism in Latin America, Argentina was a main focal point. Uruguay was much more solidly pro-ally, although there were certainly pockets of sympathy and support for, as I said, much more the kind of Spanish and Italian brand of fascism than what was going on in Germany.
So could you tell us then how Radio Feminina goes from being this sort of mouthpiece of liberal feminism to being blacklisted?
What happens, and this part of the story has been exceedingly difficult to uncover in all but the shadiest of ways, and part of this has to do with the issue of sources. Radio during those days was under the auspices of the Ministry of Defense, and getting information out of the Ministry of Defense, even today in Uruguay, is quite a difficult matter that has to do with, really has more to do with the military dictatorship in Uruguay in the 1970s than it does anything that went on in the 1940s. They're fairly reluctant to give up any paperwork, any documents that they might possess. But what happens is that at this same time that Radio Feminina is really reaching its apex of interesting intellectual programming aimed at women, of course, you have the war beginning in Europe. And one of the things that's going on here that is acknowledged by almost everyone is that the owners of the radio station, particularly a guy named Canepa, were in fact Nazi sympathizers, I think it's fair to say. There was little indication of that political sympathy in terms of the broadcast content in Radio Feminina until the later months of 1938, when you do see a few announcements that Radio Feminina was, for example, broadcasting a concert from Berlin. And in September of 1938, they aired speeches by both Hitler and Mussolini. Events that were brought up a lot of criticism in the radio press.
Criticism because it's fascist, or because, I guess, male voices on an all-women's radio station? Or
no, criticism because it was fascist. And they tried to compensate for it. Radio Feminina responded by running a speech of the Pope, which was supposed to somehow counteract the airing speeches of Hitler and Mussolini. They tried to defend it by saying that this was about giving people access to the full range of political views and so that people would understand what was happening in Europe at the time. But it was, it was a problematic move, and certainly was connected to the fact that certain owners of the station were indeed sympathetic with the Axis cause, and this is what landed the station in hot water, even if its programming, with these few exceptions, did not really reflect those kinds of things. Other stations indeed that were owned by this same group of people, particularly by this man Kanepa, were in fact running German broadcast directly, Spanish language broadcast coming directly from Germany, and that were absolutely pro-Nazi propaganda. And those kinds of programs were making their way onto, if you will, the sort of sister stations of Radio Femenina, Radio Uruguay, and Radio Artigas. But by and large, were not present on Radio Femenina. But the station got caught up fairly or unfairly in by the early 1940s in the growing concern about Nazi propaganda on the airwaves in South America.
And so what was the practical outcome of its being blacklisted?
Well, what happens, it's a long process. The blacklist itself probably dates from about 1939. Much of it was generated, so the story goes, by the United States Embassy that generated a list not just of radio stations that were seen as pro-Nazi or pro-Axis, but also restaurants and other kinds of businesses. And those lists were published, and Radio Femenina was on that list, mostly because of who owned the station and because of these broadcasts that had taken place in 1938. The station continued to be on the air, although you do start to see a shift in programming is sort of what happens. By the end of 1939 and into 1940, Radio Femenina shifted back abruptly to recipes, gossip, childcare tips, things like that. In other words, it shifted back to where it had begun in 1935. Whether this was because intellectual women left the station and refused to participate because of the blacklist or because the station's owners chose to get rid of that programming is unclear. But for one reason or the other, that kind of real intellectual programming vanishes by 1939-1940. As I said, the station continued on the air until August of 1944, and during that time, the licenses of these three stations, Radio Femenina, along with Radio Uruguay and Radio Artigas, these other stations I had mentioned previously, they had their licenses suspended. Their broadcast licenses were suspended because of violating various rules about anti-national propaganda and things like that. Essentially, their licenses were suspended because they were considered pro-Axis mouthpieces. Radio Femenina actually got its license back in March of 1945, so a mere 6-7 months later. The other two stations did not. But the station was really never, it was never really the same again after that point. But that's, and I can talk about that more if you want to, but that's kind of what happened. It was, but even before 1944, the station was becoming increasingly marginalized. They were clearly having difficulties gaining sponsors because they were on the blacklist, and so they continued on the air between 42 and 44, but increasingly with increasing difficulties.
We're speaking today with Dr. Christine Eric on women and radio in Uruguay and Argentina during radio's golden age in the 1930s and the 1940s. We'll take a short break for our audio question of the week, and then we'll be back for the second half of our discussion with Dr. Eric.